Shalom, and thank you for listening to Progressively Jewish, the podcast where you can explore and connect to Judaism through a progressive Jewish lens. I'm Rabbi Richard Jacoby, and I'm delighted to welcome you to the 10th and final episode of our third series for the month of Av. For this episode, I'm delighted to be joined by two local colleagues, friends and teachers of mine, Rabbi Dr. Tali Artman and Rabbi Jordan Helfman. So welcome back to Progressively Jewish, Tali. It's lovely to have you back here again.
It's lovely to be here again.
And a Shehechianu and a welcome to Jordan, who not only has come across the Atlantic to join us and is now serving the Southwest Essex and Settlement Reform Synagogue, and is therefore my near neighbour, based in Newbury Park, and Tally's as well, given her base in Wanstead. But welcome to Progressively Jewish for the first time, Jordan.
Thanks for having me, and thanks for welcoming me so nicely to the neighborhood.
It's our pleasure. Between the three of us, local colleagues as we are, we've got the privilege of bringing the third series of Progressively Jewish to its conclusion. And we're going to do this via a discussion about creation and construction and their opposite. I was looking up in a dictionary, and both have listed the same antonym for them, which is destruction. And that, I think, is kind of interesting in the sense that creation and construction can be very different things and yet share an antonym. So we may come on to that. What I want to do is start with destruction, given that the biggest significant day, or the most significant day in Av, is arguably Tisha B'Av, which is linked to the destruction of the temple. I wonder what you see as the significance of that day. Is it a day of loss and losses? Is it a day of benefit and opportunity? Is it a bit of both? What do you think? And maybe I could start with you, Tali.
Okay. Just as you were speaking about the antonyms for both creation and construction, I thought, and this has nothing to do with Tisha B'Av, or maybe just a bit, of the joy that we sometimes feel when we destroy stuff. So when you think about children who build a huge tower of I don't know what, Lego or whatever it is that they're using, and then they kick it. And the fun of kicking it sometimes far surpasses the fun of building it. And so destruction is also a two-faced process, moment, I don't know what you want to call it, in which sometimes there is just fun in leaving behind the things that we no longer need, or concluding a period of being greatly focused on something by not only letting it go, but in a way kicking it. And I'm not by any way suggesting that the destruction of the temple is God kicking his Lego bricks, not one bit. But I think this day of Tisha B'Av has a potential for us to think about, when are we creating something anew? When are we constructing something because we're just used to doing it and because the Lego bricks were put in front of us? When is our construction really constructive? And when is it not? When do we need to deconstruct it? And what are the redeeming powers of destruction, actually? And we all know that there is an ancient midrash that appears in Lamentation Rabbah, which is the rabbinic work from Eretz Yisrael of around the 6th century, that deals with the destruction of the temple, both the first and the second. And in that book, they discovered that the day of the destruction of the temple is the day that Mashiach was born. So I don't know if you like or dislike the messianic idea, but it doesn't really matter for my point. My point is that ends are good because they enable beginnings. And because there is something, I'm not saying that they're necessary, that we have to destroy something in order to begin something else. But I'm saying that just by the fact that we've changed something, we've opened a door to an opportunity for something else to happen. And I can talk about it a little more, but I think Jordan has something to say by now.
I do. You know, when you're talking about the kicking down of those bricks and of destruction, it makes me think about how when I was learning about institutional change in rabbinical school from Professor Sam Joseph, he would often talk about the change capital, or what is the pain in the organization which lets the change happen, right? And that for any organization to progress, we need a moment of pain, enough discomfort with the present to move forward. And I love that idea of the Mashiach being born on Tisha B'Av, and maybe even progressive Judaism itself is born on Tisha B'Av. So one of the first progressive rabbis writing in this milieu of Central Europe, conversations around, is Brit Milah essential to being a Jew, is David Einhorn, who moves from Eastern Europe to North America, in the American South, stands up against slavery, has to flee in the middle of the night as they're coming from him to the North. And one of the things he carried with him on that journey from Eastern Europe to North America was a draft of his Sidur called Olat Tamid, the eternal fire. And I want to read to you just a little selection for his prayer on Tisha B'Av. He starts with destruction and the sadness. With profound emotion, O Lord, masculine, I apologize, we think now of that fatal day on which the foe entered thy stronghold and thy temple became a prey to devouring flames. Continues on with sadness, and then it goes on to what happened in that change. Israel was no longer to dwell in separation from all the rest of thy children who groped in darkness and folly, but he was to spread like a fertilizing stream. The one temple in Jerusalem sank into the dust in order that countless temples, synagogues, might arise to thy honor and glory all over the wide surface of the globe. And he goes on about priestly worship changing to prayer, and really saying that there is a real, that there was enough pain, that there was this moment of real loss that enables progressive Judaism to spread to the diaspora around the world and bring God's message, the message of the priestly people around the world, which I think is just a beautiful reframing of this day of Tisha B'Av.
Thank you, Jordan. It is a fascinating reframe, and I know reframing is one of those aspects of construction and reconstruction that we might want to refer to later. I want to take us on a little bit in a moment, but Tali, I wondered if you had a response to what Jordan had just offered.
I do like the idea of the destruction is triggering Jewish existence around the globe, but not sure I sign up to the means and the measures. But I do want to say something about change from within, because we often think about the destruction of the temple as the ground zero of exile, okay, the moment in which this happens. But at least I professionally dedicate my life to studying sources from the people, the same Jews that lived in Israel and never left, okay, after the destruction of the temple and up until my personal framework about the 9th century. So something happened within. It was this explosion changed something, or managed to make people change their ways, not only by dispersing, but actually by going in. And this moment of introspection and this moment of thinking is something that I take from Tisha B'Av. And I forgot the name of the rabbi, I'm sure you're both going to tell me now, who wrote the essential book for every high holiday period. The high holidays are upon us and you're totally unprepared. Jordan is going to find it in his office. And if not, we will add it on the footnotes or whatever it is that we have here on the podcast. And in that book, they actually start by discussing Tisha B'Av and the fact that historically many bad things happen on Tisha B'Av, not just the destruction of the temple, but the destruction of the first temple and of the second temple. And sometimes, right, the breaking of the Luchot, many different disasters. And in it, what the author, which Richard is going to tell us the name of in a second.
So we're talking about Alan Liu, and the book is entitled This Is Real and You Are Completely Unprepared.
So thank you. The point that he makes is if something keeps happening to you, and symbolically something keeps happening to you on the same day, okay, then obviously there is a problem, and the problem is not with the world. The problem is with you. And what do you do with the fact that you keep experiencing the same misfortune, the same pattern, over and over and over again? Is it something that needs to change in the world, or is it something that needs to change about you? Obviously, he's making the second choice, the viable one, right? Something has to change within us. And in that way, Tisha B'Av actually marks the start of high holidays. This is the moment when our religion tells us, stop for a second, start looking inside. What happened this year that has already happened to you before? What has happened in your history that has already happened to you before? And how can you break free from it? And I think, you know, if you're looking at Jewish history and Jewish sovereignty over the land, which is part of Tisha B'Av, we are reaching a very dangerous moment. Okay, so somewhere between 70 and 80 years was the average of Jewish kingdoms to last on their lands. And you're wondering, where are we standing with this? And I think this is a very serious question of reflection. I'm almost tempted to ask you, because as some of you know, I'm from Israel. I grew up in Israel. I'm Israeli. And in Israel, a lot of people that fast on Tisha B'Av, even progressive Jews sometimes do that, they stop at noon because of the assumption that even though the temple was destroyed and people went into exile, there has been a rebuild of the Jewish nation. And therefore, it is actually not okay for us to fast the whole day. An idea that, by the way, was supported by Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi in the third century, that said, you know, I'm here, everything is good, why are we fasting? So I was kind of wondering, what's your practice around this? And do you see it as something that you personally observe? And how? I've already stated my stand on this, so you're allowed to decline my offer.
I have to say, in contrast to your upbringing, I grew up in a liberal Judaism that pretty much ignored Tisha B'Av, and I would say many progressive Jews of that era didn't even know the day existed in the Jewish calendar. And so it wasn't something that ever seemed of importance, and so certainly fasting on it was never something that I contemplated. I guess I'm still enough of a dyed-in-the-wool liberal not to feel that it's a day upon which I would fast. That said, you've also created a very good argument for some meaningful reflection on that day, and the insanity, as I hear it called elsewhere, of doing the same thing again and again and expecting different results is a useful frame, I think, for Tisha B'Av and for us to understand it. And therefore, doing something different within ourselves on that day may well be a trigger to unleashing the potential that we could have within us for it. So it's something else to think about. Jordan, any response you wish to offer?
Yeah, what's interesting, I'm trying to quickly Google as we speak to see what I wrote. Gosh, it must have been 20 years ago now when I was asked to write the weekly newsletter from the URJ, the reform movement in North America, on the topic of Tisha B'Av. I can't find it in my quick Googling. It's out there somewhere. But what I remember to see if I talked about my own practice then to see how it's changed till today. What I do remember from that reflection was that I was at the time running or co-running with Jenny Walton the liberal Jewish summer camp, Camp Kadima for LJY Netzer, and the Masorti movement counselors were talking about how they would build a model of the temple with the kids, and they would spend a lot of time on it, and then they would stand there and have the kids watch them as they kicked apart their art project, and their tears would come. They said, and that's what it feels like to be a Jew on Tisha B'Av, and a real positive experiential education moment. No, that was probably many years before things like that were considered abusive in experiential education, and not part of what we did or would do on an LJY camp. But I will say, it's often in summer camp. I was always in camp during Tisha B'Av as a kid, and there would always be the couple of people who would fast. I ended up, and in my current practice, I will sometimes fast till noon, but mostly out of kind of in the back of my mind, it happens to be Tisha B'Av, but in reality, I just skip breakfast, and it ends up meaning I fast until noon. It's kind of a passive way of participating in the holiday, or in the commemoration more than holiday. But really, I'm kind of in the more where Richard is, where it was never part of my upbringing, but rather something which is marking a moment of the past, which enabled us to get to, as part of the journey to today. I do wonder, though, you talk about this cyclical or even maybe even spiraling, if we talk about progressive Judaism, view of Jewish history in the future, and what does it mean that we're saying that, like, what does need to change in us? What is it that you think when you approach Tisha B'Av, what are you fasting for or about, if it is a personal fast as well as a fast of our people?
Oh no, I don't believe in not eating for the sake of someone else. It always has to do with my soul. But what you make of it is what you make of it. And I think that is exactly the point. And there might be things as a community that we need to think of. I mean, this process of introspection is not just an introspection as an individual. So while I am very attached to my food, I might consider giving my mind a bit more freedom, in the sense that it could be an opportunity, especially if we think about our synagogues, about other communities that we're part of, because we're often part of multiple communities. Just a day in the year when we think, are we as an organization, are we as in a community, who are we leaving behind? Who are we not giving voice to? Who are we harming? Could there be, and this is right, this is the legends of the Khuban, the legends of destruction is always about seeking who is the person you've insulted, whether intentionally or unintentionally. Where did we cause harm? And this is still not the practice of repentance that is still waiting for us, right? Nobody wants you to do anything on Tisha B'Av. You just have to make this really, and I think the most difficult part, which is taking something that was completely, that you are unaware of, that you're unconscious of, and suddenly seeing it in front of your eyes. And then you need some weeks before you can start repenting, because just acknowledging is difficult. And perhaps that is our task for this day. just to acknowledge.
Thank you, Tally. That's a wonderful framing of the day for us to consider, and for everyone who's listening to this to consider, I think. In it, you also used that phrase about who have we marginalized, who have we ignored, who have we failed to elevate to their rightful place in society. And you've brought me beautifully to the closing theme, in a way, of this series, which the series has been about seeking to elevate women's voices. Because throughout the many centuries of Judaism, those voices have been amongst the marginalized. And I would certainly state with a fair degree of confidence that we are nowhere near parity of esteem in terms of voices other than men having equal status and stature and being heard as willingly and as openly as the male voice. And I wonder, finishing as a closing question or pair of questions, this idea of, do we always need to destroy in order to make the space in which creation and construction can happen? And I had in mind also the phrase that I've heard often about smashing the patriarchy. You know, do we actually need to take the sandcastles that have been made and trash them, or take the lovingly created model of the patriarchal temple and kick it down before we can create something anew? And I wonder if you might both share some thoughts from your perspectives just in the last very few minutes, so a couple of minutes each, please, on those sorts of questions. I know they're big ones. Who'd like to kick us off? So, Jordan, let's come to you first, and we'll give Tally the right to close.
As would be only right on this topic. And in fact, I will say that when you're not part of a group, it's hard to speak for a group. And so I will zoom out even into the conversation of do we need to tear down versus how do we work with what we have in a bigger sense. And I was in thinking about this question, and Rabbi Tally brought before Echa Rabbah, the Lamentations Rabbah as a text. And what I think is interesting in that text is it totally reframes what's happening in Judaism. It talks about how the defenders of the city, the Notori Karta, are the children in the study hall, and that we need scholars. And it takes systems that were and imagines an ideal world around us. And I think it's a act of real, I guess, chutzpah to imagine what the world could look like. And so possibly on this day, as we're mourning loss, as we're thinking about what we are missing inside of ourselves, it can give us the bravery to think, if we didn't harbor all of us in ourselves in different ways, misogyny and a role of society as it was, or as it was in the past, in the quote unquote good old days, but rather if we were to imagine a world with more equality, what could it look like? So hopefully today gives us a bit of bravery around our vision of the world, and that we're able to reframe it and think of it differently in the future. But what it looks like, I'll leave to Rabbi Tally to discuss.
Thank you for this kindness, Jordan. I was thinking that patriarchy is a bit like a bully. And perhaps we should treat it as such. And as we all know, the quickest way to disarm one is not to punch it in the teeth, as opposed to some were taught when they were children. But I think it's to ask a bully, where does it hurt? Right? What is it that disables you and makes you react in this way? And that very question, asking questions from this order, they destroy, but not violently. And it's about dissolving, or I don't know how to call this, because as Richard pointed out, we have a shortage of vocabulary to describe undoing in a way that is not violent. And I think perhaps this is what feminism and feminist thought bring to our paradigms, which are, I refer to him as Ab Shlomo, and I mean Sigmund Freud. So Ab Shlomo taught us all to think about the world as an Oedipal struggle in which sons and father are set against each other, and one of them wins. And no matter who wins, it's a tragedy in a way. And feminist thought has taught us that this is not the only model that exists in the world, and that in order to start something new, we don't have to destroy what is already there. We just have to move aside and see what happens. Or we have to be tender towards the thing that is there and find out what is it that is driving it crazy. And I think when we look at the Bible and we look at the narratives that we have there, we suddenly have changing models of this. So if we start with the first pair of brothers, right, of Cain and Abel, they one kills the other, and it's almost accidental which one kills which, but never mind, over the favor, winning the favor of a father. And obviously that's not good. And then slowly, slowly, we have different models of brotherhood and of sisterhood. And I think we have as the first couple of sisters, which should have been set one against the other completely, but actually find ways to live with each other, which is Rachel and Leah. Okay, they give us hope. And then we see that in the next generation after Rachel and Leah, the son of Leah, which is Judah, and the son of Rachel, which is Joseph, they could have clashed about who's going to be the leader of Israel and who's going to be more important. But instead, they I think the most beautiful scene in the Bible, if you ask me, in Genesis, is this moment when they have this conversation and they're both in tears and this family gets reunited. And then when we think about what we say is a blessing to our children on Shabbat evening, I think Rabbi Richard can take it from here.
As Tali knows, I was considering, why is it that Yisimcha Elohim is Ke'efraim V'chim Manasseh? Who are Ephraim and Manasseh that they warrant to be the pair of sons that we are aspiring for our sons to be like, when for the daughters, and yes, it's a binary system, but so it was, they get the full works. They get Sarah, Rebecca, Leah, and Rachel. And that seems to be something that is out of kilter and unbalanced. And I wonder if that plays into the argument that you were bringing, Tali.
I like the fact that there are two siblings, Ephraim and Manasseh, the two sons of Joseph, and two sister wives, Rachel and Leah, that appear there as models of taking things forward. And there are other models as well. And Ephraim and Manasseh, I think one of the most beautiful moments in the Bible is when Jacob wants to bless Ephraim and Manasseh, and he puts his hands on the first on the head of the youngest. And Joseph, which knows all the stories that came before him, right? With Isaac blessing the wrong son, supposedly, and with those that the youngster that kind of steals the firstborn, right? He wants to set things straight. And he tells his father, no, this is the firstborn and this is the secondborn. And Jacob says, no, I know what I'm doing. And I think there is something in that moment of thinking about these destinies that supposedly we had, that the older one will be controlling the younger one, that the young one will rise up against the older one. Our questions of, you know, will men stay in charge forever? Will women have to fight their way? Could there be a different model? And I think there is something nice in this Shabbat evening moment when you have them, all the models kind of spread out before you. And you can think, as a father, or as a mother, what kind of blessing am I giving my son? What kind of blessing am I giving my daughter? And you choose the model that's important to you. And that's the one that you bless your children with. And maybe on this note, we should always also add that this is a very happy moment for liberal Judaism, as it now has a female rabbi CEO, Rabbi Charlie Baginski, and also a female rabbi president, Alexandra Wright, and to extend our well wishes to both of them in hope that this will bring more and more women to carry such important roles within the Jewish world.
Thank you so much, Tali, and thank you, Jordan, for your contributions. And I think we've left ourselves at the end of this episode in this series, very much looking forward to the establishment of new parallel structures to the old. We're dissolving rather than destruction, perhaps, or however we can find that word, of old paradigms, so that we can replace them with new and better ones. And if anything summarizes what progressive Judaism is about, then it is about this progressive revelation, this unlearning of past habits and taking on new and better understandings, that we are a group that will change our minds when we learn that changing our minds is necessary. And so we continue our journey. I want to thank you both, Jordan and Tali, for teaching us during our discussions in this episode and when we have introduced the month of Av. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Richard.
Our thanks go to Rabbi Jordan Helfman and to Rabbi Dr. Tali Artman for joining me to introduce the month of Av. We are also grateful to Liberal Judaism, Reform Judaism, and Leobeck College for supporting Progressively Jewish. If you haven't already, please do subscribe to Progressively Jewish and encourage your friends to do the same. Also, please send us your questions so that we can build future episodes, indeed future series, on your interest, concerns, and feedback. Leave a comment with your podcast provider or send us an email to progressivelyjewish@gmail.com. I'd like to remind you that our first series was designed to help people daily navigate the months of reflection and repentance, Elul and Tishri, in the wake of the onset of the pandemic. Do explore this archive, especially if you missed these episodes the first time round, and also look out for some of the episodes that we might represent in a revised way during the summer break. Progressively Jewish will be back in the autumn with a new series, about which we will share details nearer the time. For now, have a great summer and keep learning and growing in a progressively Jewish way.